Okay, guys, you ready? On that note.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of My Worst Date. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina. And boy, do we have a lot to discuss. This has been a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found something on Reddit that has deeply disturbed me. And it is an Ask Women post. It says, what's the weirdest thing a partner has ever done to you? And then gone, does that feel good? And I know everybody has that thing where someone tries something and they're like, and I believe we've talked about it on the podcast before.
Oh, sure.
It's like, you know, titty fucking, yeah, like.
That's not for me.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And like armpits.
No. I'm grateful that my boobs are so small that that's not a possibility. Like, no man is ever going to be like, can we try that? It. Like, no, it won't work.
But has any man tried to use his big toe to finger you?
Ooh.
Set a 1 minute timer to rub your labia.
1 minute.
1 minute.
And then his finger in your belly button.
I'm sorry. Wait. What? Is this the same
sexual encounter?
Okay.
No.
All of these things.
First of all, rubbing my labia? Why? The fuck? Why?
Have you ever been aggressively like rubbed?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
It's in fact, awful. Just all.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to start a fire.
No. Yeah. Oh my God.
Like, whoa, watch a DJ such and such. Record scratch. Get the fuck out of here.
And all of those things, like it feels like whenever like you have a piece of technology that's making noise and you don't know how to stop it. And so you're just like pushing buttons. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You're like, I don't know, like throw it, like switch the lever, like push the button, like
he's
like, this is the key. Like you do 1 minute of labia rubbing, mm-hmm, and then a quick poke in the belly button. And that's how, that's really, that really
that,
gets
is that a reset? Control, you know? Alt, yeah, delete.
Exactly.
Reset.
Exactly.
This and is how you reset woman.
What made me laugh about that Reddit thread too is that so many of the people who were talking about this kind of thing on there were saying, they said, like the person who was doing it said that it worked on everyone else.
Okay. Oh, always. They're like, all my other girlfriends like it.
And no one, you've never had other girlfriends then. I don't believe
you. Or they're lying to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I do think a lot of this has to do with like porn being people's sex ed.
Yeah.
And people thinking that stuff in porn is real. Right. You know what I mean? And it's like, no, hashtag fake news. Like nobody wants their vagina scrubbed. You know, like that.
1 minute and 1 minute only.
Yeah.
And it's not even, I'm sorry, my labia. Like you're,
yeah.
Do you,
not even my clit. Yeah, exactly.
Not, even, come for
not
the clit.
Even the part that matters.
Right? I might let you put your big toe on my clit.
Oh, no.
If you were doing the right spot. I don't want it.
Some of the guys I've dated, they're freaking eagle talon toes.
Oh, no.
No, thank you.
I'm okay, like, never mind. You're going to get a fungus. Like, ew.
Up in there.
Okay. Absolutely no.
You ruined it.
Sorry.
Okay. No, it's fine.
I ruined it.
No.
Here's another one. Right. Here we go. He blew air into my vagina like he was blowing up a balloon.
What?
He blew air up there.
It's not even like a light, like, it's like an aggressive.
Yes. Like, why?
Does he want you to queef?
Yes. Maybe he's got a real thing.
Maybe that's his thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. It's a lot of like rubbing above or around the clit. Like this chick says, rubbing like a solid 5 inches above my clit.
5 inches.
Not even touching my actual vagina, more like my pelvis. When I corrected him, he said, he already knew where it was, but he was with other girls that liked it like that.
No,
sir, they did.
Sir, you've never been with a woman.
You just rubbed my fucking belly.
Pelvis bone.
Like, what are you doing?
Stop.
No.
Also, why I get so fucking defensive?
Oh, I know.
God. Just, Jesus.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, what purpose could that possibly serve? Other girls like that. No. Why? Why would they?
A guy used to wear a necklace and try to rub it on me. Like it was some kind of hot tease. All I can see is just like puka shells or something. Like, oh my God.
It's a cross necklace.
Oh my God.
People are so weird.
What they think, like what?
And look,
this is the problem when there's no communication.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's this one though that I'm looking for that Keegan and I were like, we're fucking dead. Like we can't. Oh, he had an outie belly button, and I have an innie.
Yes,
he tried grinding his outie into my innie really hard.
No,
and was moaning about how good it felt.
That's so. It makes me feel like, are you from this planet?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like,
yeah.
Is this like a mating ritual from
let's get Demi Lovato
your home
on this.
Planet?
Absolutely.
Get Demi on the case.
Wow.
Your outie belly, but oh, I just don't like it. I don't know why it skeeves me out so much.
It really does to me too.
Deep yeah. belly button.
Me too.
Ooh. Like a really deep one. And I just like, I don't want anything in there.
No.
Like at all. I don't want your fingers. I don't want your outie belly button. I don't want your big toe.
Whoa!
Like, is belly button stuff like a thing?
Like, not for me.
It's got to be because it's coming up on these lists like more than once. Like sticking fingers in there, sticking other belly buttons in there.
No. Yeah. No. It is not an erogenous zone for me at all.
Me neither.
Like, skip it. You know what I mean? You're at track A with the titties.
Yeah.
Go ahead and skip to track B the vajay because
Nothing in between.
Yeah, there's
nothing
no
there.
Yeah, there's no secret song. There's nothing else going on in between there. Yeah.
No. No. No hidden tracks.
No. Nope. I promise you. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I don't think I have any like weird erogenous zones. I think the only one I have, the back of my neck is very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's
not weird. That's pretty normal.
No, yeah, I don't think that's weird.
I do think it's sexy for a guy to touch the back of your back. Like lower
the small of your back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's sexy. Or, I mean, it is when you read about it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because I don't know in real life if I really like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, are there things that you're like, that was great in that one romance book that I read.
Oh, there are tons of stuff that I like in romance books or in porn that I don't want anything to do about that in real life.
I sent you that TikTok of that scene that has gone viral from like the 2007 Pride and Prejudice where he like helps her out of a carriage and then he's walking away and he does that hand flex thing because his hand touched her hand.
Masturbated to that scene.
You're not alone.
I fucking promise you that I have.
If the internet has taught me anything,
it's that
you are not alone in that at all. And it is.
It's so hot.
It is. It's like he was like, touching her was like electric for him.
Yes.
And you're like,
oh my God. That shit turns me like you can't believe. That's what we play for.
Yes.
That's peak Jane Austen repressed sexual energy. And I live for that.
Honestly.
So I guess, yeah, I could be on the list too. Because I'm like, gently unclench your hand after and just keep doing it. Don't stop.
Do it again. One more time.
I don't know. It was really weird.
Oh,
she just.
God.
Oh, man. Wow. I am over here in unrelatable camp. This is not things that. I mean, I do get the like delayed gratification, the electricity of being around somebody, like that whole thing. I understand. Again, don't want it in real life.
Mm.
Don't.
You're not a fan of the will they, won't they in real life?
I am.
Oh, like with myself?
Or like that early part of like trying to figure out if someone like likes you the way that you like them. That's the best part.
It is the best. It is electric.
Yeah.
It really is.
I want to skip to the end of that book. I need to know if they end up together or not.
That moment.
And that's why the small of the back is such a thing. Because it's like, if it's in that space where you're like, oh, I don't know if they like
touching
me back or not. And then they
touch you. And you feel, and it like burns in a certain way. Oh, it's so good.
Mm.
Maybe when I'm married too long. That's the problem.
First met Eric and we have been talking for like weeks and we hadn't met yet.
Sure.
Oh my God. Just, the touch on the small of the back was like, how fast can you eat chicken? Because this is prelude. Like, we going back to my place right now. But that moment, those moments before you have that first kiss.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Nothing
yeah,
like
the
it.
The lead up. Yes. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's mm-hmm. the best.
I think there's just people who are super addicted to that too, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's why they kind of like go from one
relationship
thing to the next.
Chasing yeah, it's the NRE, like new relationship energy or whatever. Yeah. It's all the chemicals that flood your brain.
Sure.
It's the reason why like after 2 years together, like the majority of those chemicals are gone. So
or cocaine now.
Yeah. Cocaine. Oh, my gosh. Well, what else do we have going on?
Well, we have a new...
patron?
Oh, no. I was going to say we have a new Sexiest Man Alive.
Oh.
People.
That we do. And, okay, so last night we went out with the Spark My yes. Interest podcast, the girls from that, and Keep It Weird. We went to dinner. It was really fun.
So
and
much
we
fun.
Went out afterwards, and look, bad decisions were made on my part. I had a real weird... morning.
By weird, she means hungover.
Look, I haven't had a morning like this in a very long time. Like, I don't know
what this is.
I cannot remember the last time I've had a morning like this where, like, I was like, I woke up, no shirt on. My pajama top was next to the bed. So it was like,
you got almost got there.
An effort was so made. Close. My phone was plugged into my charger, but my charger was not plugged into the wall. So my
classic.
Phone was dead.
Classic.
Like all of my clothes were just that I had worn the night before were just in a pile in the bathroom.
Just makeup on.
No, I did. I yes. took my makeup off.
Yes.
I did take my makeup off, but priorities. I did not take my contacts out. Oh. So. So yeah, I had a morning, but during dinner, we were proposed yes. the question, like it was presented to us that we have never done Keanu Reeves. Have we never done Keanu Reeves?
I really feel like we have. For
I
sure.
mean, I'd have to check the chart that we have because mm-hmm. we do keep a chart of our... I feel like
I swear
had
we
to
had.
Have had.
To.
I know we've talked about him.
Yeah.
King,
well, because we talked
King
about him when
Kings.
That movie came out. Remember? The
Well, we talked about yeah, him anyway. When he got married.
Always Be My Maybe or whatever.
Oh.
He was in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He played himself.
So funny.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But so Paul Rudd
we've
is...
We've done Keanu Reeves characters. That's what we've done.
Did we?
But
John
we've never
Wick.
Done... Yeah. But
I remember
we've never
that.
Done Keanu Reeves. Yeah.
That's right. We did. We did Neo and John Wick and someone else. I remember now.
Yeah.
But we have not okay. done Keanu Reeves specifically.
Got it.
And so we were talking about that. And we were talking about Paul
like
Rudd.
Impossible people, right?
Being mm-hmm. the sexiest man alive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And like if we had both of them in the same FMK, like that would be so difficult. And then we were trying to think of like, okay, it's like if
what's
we wanted to make a
possible scenario,
a truly impossible like FMK, like who else should we add to that? And we tossed some people around this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because Oscar Isaac was on my first list, but
doesn't do it for Cassie.
I yeah. just think it's here's my thoughts on it. Like, I just don't think Oscar Isaac's is iconic. For me, like, I don't know if it's just like he's not been around in my lexicon long enough.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, for me to feel.
You don't have that parasocial relationship yeah, yeah. with Oscar Isaac that you do right. with Keanu Reeves or Paul Rudd, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. they're just.
I agree with
they've
that.
They've been part of our lives, like, forever.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah.
So we found our third, finally. And so the impossible FMK stands thusly. Ryan Reynolds, mm-hmm. Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. Paul Rudd. Mm-hmm. No friend. This is a true cage match.
Cage match.
Fight to the death.
Fight to the death. Mm. What's it going to be? This one is, it really is impossible.
Now, I feel like...
Show your work, ladies.
I feel like people will think that like Ryan Reynolds is maybe like an odd one to throw in for the impossible FMK, but he is so funny.
And
I think that his...
Attractive.
So good looking.
Good looking, funny. His relationship with Blake Lively is like
amazing.
Goals.
Yeah.
Good business person as far as I yep. can see. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Takes
yeah.
care of his shit. He's from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that option.
So nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And Keanu Reeves, I mean, do we even need to?
I mean,
like,
he's a saint. He's yeah. constantly like just saving people.
Saying
there
doing
are,
nice
there
things.
There are whole podcasts dedicated to people talking about their encounters with Keanu Reeves.
Oh. Yeah.
And they're all positive.
Yeah.
Bless
like
your
every
heart.
Single one.
Who do you kill in this scenario?
I honestly,
and Paul Rudd, I mean.
We just watched a video with Paul Rudd in it, and that man is 52.
Yes.
Yes. And looks better now than yeah. he did in Clueless.
100%. You're
he
absolutely
is
right.
A an aged wine that I'm just like, or like a scotch. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh shit. Mm. Oh, now we're Blue Label.
Okay.
Because we've been.
And here's the thing about all three of these men too. Like, I feel like if they were not celebrities, all of them are attainable too. Like, I think that that's part of what makes them so attractive.
Yeah, this isn't like a Brad Pitt or a Clooney or that kind of thing. These are, this is part of why it makes it impossible is because it's like,
Ryan Reynolds is really attractive, but I've also known people who were that attractive in real life. And like, it wasn't like I couldn't speak to them, right? Like they were like, they were attractive, but they were also like chill, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I know what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Oh, wow. I'll let you go first
because I have no clue.
Okay. So I am going to marry Paul Rudd.
Okay.
That is who I'm going to marry.
That's
it's
smart.
Because I think both him and Ryan Reynolds are very funny. Mm-hmm. However, I feel like Paul Rudd has a more wry energy, which is more my speed of humor. That I really feel like Ryan Reynolds is sillier. And while they're both funnier, I would just like gun to my head would prefer a Paul Rudd straight faced, like the straight man kind of humor. And so, yeah, I think we would laugh. He seems nice. He seems like he would be a great uncle to my nieces. Like he's just got,
He's got
fun to play with the kids.
Uncle energy.
He's got get on the ground.
Yeah.
Play with the kids energy.
Yeah.
I think that Ryan Reynolds does too, to be honest.
Oh yeah. But I'm strictly going with my sense of humor.
Sure,
Paul Rudd is the one that I would prefer.
Okay.
Now, who would be a better lay? Keanu Reeves or Ryan Reynolds?
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. I'm going to let you do it.
You bury your own grave on this one. You wanted to go first.
I feel like Keanu Reeves would put on Pretty Hate Machine and fuck my brains out.
Yeah.
I get a real 9-inch nails vibe from him that I'm just like, I mean.
I feel like Keanu Reeves is unassuming. Like, I feel like looking at them both, like my knee-jerk reaction would be that like Ryan Reynolds would be better in bed. But I actually don't think that's true. I actually think that Keanu Reeves is going to like...
He's quiet.
Yeah.
I'm hearing the song Closer in my head right now. And like hands animal. Above the head. I mean, he's just one that is just going to be like dark and intense. Yeah. And like it's that kind of night. So I am going to fuck Keanu Reeves and I'm going to kill Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
And that is an impossible choice.
Yeah. It's fucking awful.
I think I know what I'm going to do though now.
Okay.
All right. Oof. God, it really is fucking impossible. Okay.
Like I feel bad, honestly.
Yeah, there's no... Okay. Because when you were explaining the difference between like Ryan Reynolds humor versus a Paul Rudd humor...
Paul Rudd's always the straight man.
And I love that.
For the most.
I love that. And I kind of like that even for my own humor. I like kind of playing that kind of straight man accidentally fucking did something stupid kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know if his humor is my full-time humor, though. That's
right.
That's what I'm going to say.
You feel more like the stuff that Ryan Reynolds does with Blake Lively, where it's that kind of like, they like make fun of each other.
That's your
that feels more
I feel
your speed.
Like your, yes. That's your
Am
speed.
I going to do exactly Blake Lively where it's like I cut him out of the picture and wish us happy anniversary. Yeah. And it's just a close up of me and
100%. That's you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that. I think I'm gonna marry Ryan Reynolds.
I love that for you.
Actually, this works really well.
I feel like we're the exact type of hilarious together.
I think we're all gonna marry different people, and I think that this is gonna work out for us.
I do too.
Because I know who I'd put Keegan with.
I know. Okay, so because I'm gonna marry Keanu. Or no, I'm gonna marry Paul Rudd.
No, you're going to marry Ryan Reynolds.
I am.
You are.
I'm sorry. I'm going to marry Ryan Reynolds. I think that, I'm going to marry Ryan Reynolds. I'm sticking with that. And then.
Are you going to fuck Keanu or Paul Rudd?
It's so tense.
So hard.
It's so hard.
I don't know. Oh, my God. I really thought I knew for a second.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of like, I kind of feel like I would rather marry Keanu. No, I don't feel like I could deal with that intensity.
He's too good. He seems also like,
I can't live up to that good.
I put Keegan with Keanu because he seems like they can get down on some activist shit together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't kill Keanu either. And honestly, I think Paul Rudd.
Go for it, girl. Dude, we're going to get mail anyways.
Listen.
Shoot your shot.
People are going to have opinions. It doesn't matter. It's okay.
Oh my it's okay. God.
I'm so nervous.
You're going to fuck Paul Rudd then. You're going to kill Keanu.
She was not going to say it. Like, did you see that? She was like, just move on.
If my actual lips don't move when I say it, does it count?
All right. Hey, I love that journey for you. I think Paul Rudd would be the type of lay, but he wouldn't mind that you brought like your vibrator to the table.
Oh,
you know
what
I mean? Like he'd be like, let's mess with
down
that.
For
He's down.
Sure.
Oh, yes, yeah. He is Mr. Pussy.
He likes it down there.
Mr. Pussy.
Yeah.
He enjoys it down there.
That is the best.
He holds you on the side of your, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Your conscious.
Yeah. He gets his arms around. He gets in there.
And when he says sit on his face, he means sit. Put your fucking weight down on his head.
God damn.
Jesus Christ.
Paul didn't know what was coming for him.
Hey,
if I'm honest, I think all three of these men are more than happy.
Honestly, like you can't go wrong.
Yeah,
really.
All three of these men are gonna accommodate in the bedroom, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, this is very, very hard. I think I have to marry Keanu because
you guys are gonna. You would accomplish great things together.
He would make me a better person.
You guys would have like a foundation that would help like so many people. I just know it.
I wonder what his sign is. I get very like grounded vibes.
Oh, see, I think he's very Pisces.
Really?
Yeah. I get very much a Pisces. I
can't be with a fellow Pisces. I did that once. It was terrible.
No decisions were ever made.
It was not a good.
They never ate
conflict
out.
Avoided.
And they just stayed together forever just because they couldn't break up with each other.
Yes.
Oh no, it was a terrible decision. So if he is a Pisces, I'm gonna have to change my answer just for that reason alone. But. Also,
September 2nd. Libra?
No, it's not a Libra. It's whatever is right before a Libra.
Virgo. He's a Virgo. That's great for
you. Oh, hell yeah. That's a sister sign. Yeah. Pisces and Virgo are sister signs.
Well,
oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So
well, now I want to know everybody's sign. Shit.
And he also, like, as with Elijah Wood, he exists in this chest ether behind me of, photos. That I had hung on my wall. So I feel like I owe it to my younger self to choose Keanu, to be with Keanu.
You guys, Paul Rudd's birthday is April
6th. Oh, no. Only did I marry him?
4 days before.
I don't even remember what I did. Well, yes, did. I did. I
you
married him.
An Aries.
I married a fucking Aries again. God damn it. Well, I know what I'm in for at least.
And then I think this is where it gets really, really hard. This is where it gets really, really hard. Because I think Ryan Reynolds and Paul Rudd are both going to be fucking great in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Do you want to know what Ryan's sign is?
Yes.
This tracks
this
so
actually
fucking
helps.
Hard.
This really helps.
This tracks so fucking hard.
What is it?
Scorpio.
Oh.
Ooh. Scorpios are notoriously amazing in the
sack. Listen. Yeah. Oh no. No. I feel like this is not good. I feel like I'm gonna get
oh no, 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 no.
Exactly.
Because I love Paul Rudd. Like I fucking love him, always have like big crush on him.
Since Clueless.
Yeah. I just think he is so fucking funny.
Yeah. I will remind you how selfish we are in bed. But I also want to remind you how much you love to make bad decisions.
I do love to make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. And how much you love a challenge.
Oh,
Scorpio
no.
might be too easy. You know what I'm saying?
Like, it
might
Scorpio be too is also a fellow water sign.
Yeah. Just neither of you finish ever.
We just go and go and go and go. Energizer bunny style. You know, I feel like, okay, I'm gonna fuck Paul Rudd. Just because, again, I just feel like I owe it to myself. Like, I have loved him for so long.
Yeah.
I get the sense that Ryan Reynolds is really good in bed. Like, yeah. I get the sense that, like, he's really, really good in bed.
Yeah.
But if I can go on a date with either one of them, I want to go on a date with Paul Rudd. So if we can go on a date before the sex, then I'm going to go Paul Rudd, because I just think like that would be such a fun time. I feel like I would have a really good time. Paul Rudd has the kind of energy where, like, when he's talking to you, he's like really talking to you.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You know, like I,
you know what, that's the thing that makes him sexy though. Right.
Yeah.
It's not like, and that is the crux of all of this, which is that all of these guys are sexy not because of just looks. They're not 10 for 10 on looks. Like, if they never opened their mouths, you just saw them on the street, you probably wouldn't.
They're still good looking.
Yes.
But it's
arguably all very good looking.
It's however, their actions. It's how they treat other people. They look, they're attentive, they're present.
Yeah.
They're respectful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So sexy.
Hot. Yeah.
Sexy all around.
Oh, well, that was...
It was impossible.
Really hard, actually.
Did you say who you're going to kill?
Kill Ryan Reynolds. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to do it.
I mean, somebody definitely needs to, like, post this clip and at all of these gentlemen, because I feel like they need to know.
Do they need to know? Well, please don't.
Just more superficial junk food for the brain.
That's what we play for, Dr. TJ Fossil.
Oh, gosh. Well, we do have a new patron. We have Simone Stemper. So definitely thank you so
OG,
much.
OG. Yeah.
OG supporter. Worsty. And just amazing. We also had somebody modify their pledge, and we see you, Hannah Young. We thank you so much. We really appreciate your support. We've got a lot more content coming your way. So if you want all those bonus stuff, come and join us on our Patreon.
Yeah. We're going to be putting out a bonus Tainted Love movie episode for all patron levels coming up
holiday.
Soon.
Holiday
vibes.
Mm-hmm. Also, we all are very excited to shout out one of our worsties, who had a very exciting thing happen. We love Rachel Esquivel, and she is not going to be in Esquivel much longer because her boyfriend Brandon, or if she chooses to be, you be whoever you want to be. However, she is now engaged to her boyfriend Brandon, and we wanted to, because she's been a worstie since
a ride or die.
And we went to dinner with her and Brandon when they were two years ago. And it was awesome. Like, he is so wonderful. They're wonderful together. Yeah. They've been together for a really long time. And so we are so, so happy for you.
We send our love and congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, you guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Sounds good.
Perfect.
And we're back. Okay, before we jump into stories, I just want to say, I went to the bathroom and took a look at myself, and I have 100% never recorded an episode of this podcast looking this rough.
Hey, that's what friends are for.
This is why we don't record our
video.
Video ourselves.
It is rough times over here, oof, my dudes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We just laid on the carpet for what, like a good solid 5 to 10.
Yeah. It was nice. And it was nice when I had my eyes closed. When I opened my eyes, I was like, is this rug moving? I was like, oh no, it's not. It's fine.
You're like, it's fine. It wasn't. Turns out that rug was not moving.
Turns out. Well,
spoiler alert.
Okay. So I'm going to get us started with stories this week. This is a listener story.
Yeah.
Shame receipt.
Keep sending them in.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I love a shame receipt.
Hi, ladies. I think this qualifies as a shame receipt, but you tell me. It does. Spoiler alert. It does qualify.
I love shame receipts so much.
Can't wait.
When I was 15, I went on a cruise to the Caribbean with my family. I was just old enough to join in on the teen group activities, and I was so excited. Yes. Cassie loves.
I feel this vibe so mm-hmm. hard. The story so far could have been written by me.
Cassie was the one on our group trip that was just like, what's the itinerary for the day? Like, she's like, oh, they have trivia at 4 in the lobby, or we could go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, why else are you on a cruise?
You love doing all that
stuff. Yeah, I mean, if you're not like at a place, like they have all kinds of things to do. Yeah. So much more room for activities. What am I going to sit in my bed chamber?
I met a cute boy from Canada and immediately fell in love.
Of course.
As you do when you're 15 and bright-eyed and not yet jaded by heartbreak.
Yep, yep.
We had a whirlwind week, stuck to each other at all times. I experienced my first makeout sesh and my first tequila shot.
Yes. Oh. Cruising when you're a teenager. Yeah.
Amazing.
I was devastated when the week was over and I came to the realization that I would likely never see him again. We exchanged emails and AIM handles. This was pre-Facebook. And made promises that neither of us would be able to keep. I went home and life went on as normal, and soon I forgot about him and moved on to the next object of my teenage affection. Several years later, when I was in my mid-20s.
He's like, but you promised.
Several years later, when I was in my mid-20s, I received a message from him. I thought that was odd. We had added each other when Facebook came around, but never really chatted or anything. With butterflies in my stomach, I opened it up to see what he had sent. I had a split-second teenage fantasy that maybe he was going to be in my state sometime soon and wanted to catch up. Mm-hmm. But no.
It's a dick pic, isn't it? It's a fucking dick pic.
It's worse. He messaged me to tell me that he had been having a bad couple weeks. And he Googled his name on a whim. He was surprised to find a poem on DeviantArt that teenage me had written about him.
Oh my God. Well, this just went from being written by Cassie to being written by Christina. Yeah.
Apparently, I used his whole fucking name. This man's legal name.
DeviantArt.
Legal name.
She's like, God, I have a count there. Still.
I was absolutely mortified. Time stopped. My heart fell out of my body. I could only respond, LOL. Well, that's super embarrassing. He was thinking super sweet about it and told me that it actually cheered him up and wanted to thank me. So I guess the moral of the story is, if you want to write a cheesy teenage poetry for the love of God, don't use their full name.
Oh, or do. That's or beautiful. Do. Oh my God.
Can you imagine Googling your name and you're like, wait, what?
On DeviantArt.
There's a teenage love poem about me.
I really hope it was like accompanied by some.
Oh, like, the terrible imagery is going to be. I fucking good. Need that poem.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now. If this listener doesn't email us that poem, I'm sad. Own it.
Disappointed.
I really wish. I did look when I was home to see if I could find that that specific diary that I had written my like softcore porn story.
Let me tell you this.
I could not find them.
As someone who has located and reread several journals recently of my own, it is the most horrifying thing you could do. I was telling you guys that I found the journal from whenever I was like super like evangelical going on missions.
Woo. It doesn't age well,
It does not. Oh, it's a nightmare.
Like, I am in a cult.
Oh, God. It was terrible. Okay. I managed to get my DeviantArt account shut down after that, despite not having the email or password anymore. She just frantically messaging.
Like, shit. Please help.
All she would have had to do was like just tell the person on the other end what happened. And they're like, oh, we'll take care of that right away.
Yeah.
Shut that shit down.
Next time, lead with that.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So hopefully I don't get any other surprises anytime soon. Thanks for putting out the best podcast in existence. You're all wonderful.
That fucking story is wonderful. Yes. I love that. Now I'm like, now I need to trace my early online steps.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
2008 was a wild year. Mm-hmm. So I need to see what's out there for me.
We should all do that because it's only a matter of time before that shit resurges. Have you Googled yourself before? Well, I've Googled myself before. And like, it's generally okay stuff because I did I did hard delete my MySpace. So that there's no recovering it. I kind of wish there was.
Which is actually kind of sad. It is. I wonder if I hard deleted mine. I'm going to take a look I didn't. To see.
I did not.
I wish I hadn't because it is like a time capsule of who you were. Mm-hmm. I want to know who was in my top eight.
I'm pretty sure you can get onto mine. Like, and see it. I don't think I can. I don't remember. Of course, I don't remember any of my passwords or anything. But I do. I don't think that I can. Yeah, like edit or do anything with it. But I just shit. I don't know how to code either anymore.
Yeah,
apparently I lost that skill.
Yeah,
completely. I was real good at it for a while.
Yeah, you could like jailbreak your MySpace so that you'd have like a top 16 instead of top 8.
Yeah, top 12.
Very handy. Can you believe that we used to rank our friends?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Like that
with pleasure
publicly. Yes. Publicly.
Yeah.
That is horrifying. Yeah. No wonder we're all fucked up.
I remember getting into a fight with a boyfriend at the time because I wasn't his number one friend.
Oh yeah. Oh, if you were in a relationship
You're not their number
one. Non-negotiable.
Right.
Non-negotiable. Like you can break up with them for that. And no one will blame you. They'd be like oh,
you weren't number one? No.
I wouldn't put up with that.
Especially
shit
with some other girl.
Oh yeah.
Like she's my best friend. Uh-uh.
Yeah, no. Not on my watch.
We're friends now. Well, I have a listener story from Molly who writes, "Hey friends, I've been listening for a long time, almost since the beginning, and thought it was finally time to share my story with you all. Several years ago, I was at my friend's apartment before a night out. She had some neighbors a couple doors down, and we had invited them over to have some drinks before we all went out to the bars down the street. We had a great time, and I ended up hitting it off with one of them. We had all gone out a few more times, and finally, we'll call him Joe, and I went home together after a sloppy night of drinking."
Oh, can't relate.
Sloppy nights? Oh, we've all had our share.
Yeah.
Sloppy
Look
nights.
Look at me right now.
So, we get back to his place, and we are aggressively making out on his bed, me on top of him. Now, I'm not sure what happened. Did I fall asleep? Did I have a dizzy spell? I don't know. But the next thing I know, my face hits the headboard of his bed and there is blood everywhere. No. I'm talking pouring out of my nose, down my face, down my arms, all over his bed and him. If you fucking snap your nose the right way, it is like a geyser.
This man, he's like, I stumbled into like an A24 horror movie. Like, what just happened?
Oh my God. If someone had come in, it would be safe to assume he had murdered me.
Oh no.
So he got me cleaned up, changed into new clothes, and we went to sleep. Probably not the best idea, given I could have had a concussion.
Oh shit. I feel like that's not the stuff.
Listen, she was sloppy drunk, okay?
Just hit my head really hard. I'm just going to take a nap.
Just take a nap.
I'm just going to rest my eyes
just for a second. The next morning, we wake up, I say goodbye, and did the walk of shame down to my friend's apartment to give her the rundown of the night. To make matters worse, I walk into her apartment, and her parents are sitting there making me explain why in the world I was bruised and covered in blood.
Yeah,
like, I would be like, if I saw her face, you know, both of her eyes were black, covered in blood. She just came in overnight, but literally 911 is dialed, and I'm like, we're arresting the motherfucker. That'd be my first thought.
Yes.
Like, who did this to you?
You don't know him that well
either.
Who
did this to you?
Like, yeah.
Needless to say, Joe and I never saw each other again. I am now happily married, and my husband loves to bring this story up, amazing, especially mornings after I've been up all night snoring because of the broken nose I got while trying to get down with a guy after a night of drinking.
Girl, get that deviated septum fixed.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that she broke her nose and then was just like, night. Like, what?
Dude, I
definitely could. Well,
I've broken my nose before.
We're talking sloppy nights. So, sloppy scents. Definitely.
Yeah. You're like, I'm just tie.
I'm tired. Yeah, exactly. It's the reason why you got your pajama top out and then was like,
No.
No.
I can't do it. I can't do it.
What makes sense in
Tell
the moment?
Tell me again, Keegan, about how you couldn't.
I'm just saying, I've never broken a bone before, but I hear tell that it is pretty painful.
Dude, so. Breaking your nose too. But I've done that. You know, if you're trying to be all like fucking sexy, like on top, that kind of thing, and she just pulled a wild cowgirl move. And just
she's like, we're done.
Dude. Head butted the headboard.
That is some fucking full on nonsense I would do. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a shame receipt of my own real quick because that just reminded me of it. I was a dancer for a while, like in my early 20s. I wasn't 21 yet because I couldn't drink. And they would do like nights where you would like, you know, like dance off, pants off, dance off. It was a strip club, so of course it was pants off.
But yes.
But I thought I was going to be super smooth and do this like really sexy floor routine.
Oh my God. I'm loving this already.
Me too.
I am loving it.
So I made this move to like, and I was just going to like bring my head down.
And guys are like, oh, are you okay? Was it on the pole?
That's on so
the
funny.
On the fucking She's stage.
On the stage.
You just brought your head down and just fucking headbutted the floor.
And you were probably doing one of those like sexy hair.
Oh,
you
know? Hair flips for sure.
Totally.
Oh God, that's so funny.
And then I quit that night. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. There was that day I was trying to be all fresh and fly getting out of your pool or whatever. Remember that? And I fucking fell and jacked my leg up.
Busted your ass so fucking hard. I was like, whoa. Oh, God. Is there anything worse than trying to be sexy and just biffing your life?
If I try to be sexy, it is guaranteed that I'm running into something.
Just my forehead. Bam. It was so fucking loud.
Oh, my God.
In my head it was, anyway.
Did you complete the routine?
Oh, yeah. I tried. I was just. Walk it off.
Yep.
I probably had like a fucking goose egg. Like, you know,
there was one night, actually, used to have, do you remember those old school stereos that had like the tape deck and the CD player and all that shit? And then, so I had one of those on a shelf
speakers?
Yes. Right above my bed. And I guess my hand got caught in one of the fucking wires, and I brought the thing down on my fucking head in the middle of the night one night as a teenager, and I'll be damned if I wasn't. I mean, first of all, it fucking hurt as a crazy way to try to like wake up. You're like, went back to sleep. I'm like, shy. Like, that's the number one thing that I'm like, you do not go to sleep after like a concussion. I'm like, I've done that like 5 times in my life, at least that
you're like, I used to be so much smarter.
You have a real if I die, I die energy about it. You're like, well, I'm tired.
This happened.
Oh, I'm so glad I shared that shame receipt.
That's so great.
Poor Thomas. Honestly. All right. So I have a story that I got from Reddit, and it starts. It's a long one. It's a wild ride. So buckle up. It's 22. I started a new job and met the super cute guy at work. He had a previous girlfriend who he'd broke up with about 6 months before we met. She would sometimes randomly come into the shop, and he would always tell her that she shouldn't be there, that they had been broken up for months, and that she needed to leave him alone. Anyway, he and I started talking and flirted for several months. After about 3-ish months, he finally asked me out on a date. He's very introverted, and I am not. So it took some time for him to feel comfortable enough to ask me out. We go out to dinner, and he's just so sweet and so cute and adorably awkward, and I really liked him. After dinner, he invited me back to his place to talk, and I agreed, and we just chilled at his apartment talking and no hanky-panky. This is like legitimately Chris and I's first date.
I love
Like, we literally went back to his house and just sat on his bed and just
that's the fucking best
for fucking hours.
It
was amazing. It was the best. And that literally was like the next day I was like, Mom, I met my future husband. So there's that. I was sitting on one sofa and he was sitting on another. All of a sudden there was a pounding on his door. He calmly gets up and locks it.
And locks it.
Locks it.
He's like, and, where were we?
And I hear a female yell, did you just lock the door on me? It was the ex.
Oh.
I'm sitting on the couch. He's calmly asking her to please leave through the door. All of a sudden, the front window slides open. No. And she sticks her head in and starts screaming at him. At this point, he's still calmly asking her to leave while I'm sitting on the sofa clutching my mace. She then climbs in through the window.
No.
Yes.
And I see this woman. She's like 5'11 to 6 foot tall. I'm 4'11 for reference.
Oh, no.
And I thought, holy shit, I'm going to get my ass kicked.
She's a full foot taller than you.
Yeah.
Fucking crawling.
She sees me and says, who the fuck is this bitch? All the while, he's calmly trying to get her to leave. She went ballistic and started tearing down pictures in the living room, trashing them.
911.
Moves to the bedroom, and I could hear her screaming, throwing things, breaking stuff, all while my date was standing in the doorway of his room trying to get her to stop. He never raised his voice. And it seemed like that wasn't the first time that this had happened.
Oh, my gosh.
He went and got his neighbor and said, I need some help with S again. So the neighbor came over, but she didn't do anything except for stand next to me in front of the doorway in shock.
Just needed another witness.
We just need someone to just be here. just be
wow.
Eyes. Meanwhile, we can hear things escalating with her in the bedroom. I feel like I should mention that she lived, that she had been dealing with, you know, some pretty serious stuff at the time. And he calmly walks into the bedroom. And after a minute or so, he walks out of the bedroom with her in a bear hug, guiding her out of the house. Mm-hmm. Not shoving, not pushing, just as gently as possible. She was kicking and screaming, moving her out of his home. She then went and laid down in the courtyard, rolling around in the grass, crying and screaming.
Oh.
While the three of us, me, the date, and the neighbor, just stood there for a minute. Date then said he was going to call her cousin to come get her. But before he could make the call, the cousin walked up. He had brought her there and was waiting in the car the whole time. The date and the cousin went to get her, got her calmed down, and convinced her to leave. As she was walking by me, she said, I'm sorry I called you a bitch. I don't even know who you are. And then left.
It's like surprisingly respectful.
Journey, right? Yeah, like just, like, you know what?
That was a bridge too far. Sorry. Yeah,
you look great. Love this outfit on you. And then left. I sat with my date and we kind of processed the whole, what the fuck just happened?
What the fuck, cousin?
Yeah, right.
Like, one, why did you bring her here? Two, yeah. You weren't even there to like supervise. You just sat in the car.
Also, I feel like people don't talk about how the destruction of property is abuse.
Yeah,
it's not just criminal.
Yeah,
but you're performing violence on things. But it's a threat of violence against you.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Right.
Yeah. People don't talk about it. That's the reason why, you know, that whole like guy punching that punches a wall thing.
Yeah.
It's abusive. It's manipulative and it's a threat.
It's a fucking threat.
It's
an intimidation tactic as well. Like I can punch a hole in this wall.
Imagine what I could do to your face.
Right. And then they want you to be grateful that they're like, oh, I redirected my anger.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't hit you. It's like, oh, thanks so fucking much.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
As you're sweeping up drywall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That was like a therapy visit.
Totally.
That really just opened up
a lot. Yeah.
I always tell people, I'm like, if a guy you're dating punches shit and breaks shit.
Yeah.
Remember, I told you I dated I can't be with a Pisces because he would do shit like that.
No,
like
that.
Punching holes in walls and breaking stuff.
Like, I have an ex like that too.
Oh my God. I dated a Pisces like that too.
Weird.
Interesting.
We're all like side-eyeing Eric now. We're like,
I cannot imagine.
No. Would never.
Anyway, after then left, we processed it. I eventually left and drove home about 45 minutes. Surprise, surprise.
It's always.
Always. And called him when I got home, pre-cell phones, to let him know Mike got home, his request, and to see if he'd called the police. He did, but not to report what happened, but so that they would do a welfare check on her and to make sure she was okay.
We're celebrating
our 27th anniversary this year. 27 years together and 20 years married. Sorry. He is the kindest, sweetest guy who has pushed old ladies, broken down cars off the road, helped people get unstuck in the snow, fixed his friend's car for free, and would give the shirt off his back. I love him.
Aww. I'm glad that you completed that sentence because I was like,
he pushes old ladies.
What?
But I'm like, she was like, the first day with him is like, I mean, can you imagine? Somebody crawls in the fucking window?
Yeah. Beyond being frightened for my safety and their safety, I would also am like sipping my drink.
Yes.
Like,
yes, 100%. But also,
dinner
too, like
and
how
a
he,
show? How he handled it is definitely a window into like, you're like, wow, like that's how that guy dealt with this stressful situation.
So
like,
mature.
So, yeah. Yeah. Cause this was, she said at the beginning, weren't they in their early 20s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this was like, she said 27 years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Imagine.
Wow. Wow.
I just, the visual of someone climbing in through a window, of a 6 foot tall woman climbing in through a window, is like terrifying.
It really is. It's like the fucking Ring shit
exactly.
or something. Like,
Exactly.
No.
I hate this. Okay. All right. So I was trying to figure out what tainted love story I wanted to do this week. And I do want to acknowledge that we have like a grip of new listeners. So hello, new listeners.
Bienvenue. Welcome.
Welcome to the party. So I wanted to do kind of a heavy hitter.
Okay.
If you will.
Coming in hot.
Yeah, so buckle the fuck up.
Oh, geez.
Because this is terrible.
Mm.
Okay, I'm just going to jump right in. Not even going to tell you. So Overland Park, Kansas. It's a city that's not far from Kansas City, Missouri, but it's on the Kansas side.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's known as a relatively safe community. It's been voted one of the top 10 cities to live in the United States, like many times. So just to set the scene, that's where we're at. So in the 80s, Overland Park was really starting to grow, and in late 1984, a 19-year-old woman named Paula Godfrey was living in the area with her parents. So she wanted to move out on her own and gain some independence, so she started looking for a job, and in doing so, she came across this secretary position that looked really great. It had great pay, great benefits, it included training and travel, and overall, Paula was just like jackpot. You
yeah,
know?
Nice. Yeah.
So she goes to this interview and never comes home. Of course, as time passes, Paula's family is becoming increasingly worried. And as the days pass, the family begins to receive typed letters from Paula.
Mm-hmm.
They
that's
were typed.
How I respond or reach out to my family as well.
That's my only method of correspondence. Yeah. You know, when we need to record, someone needs to type a letter.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Print it out.
Deliver.
Yeah.
Buy an envelope and stamp.
I mean, you're like saying this is the 80s, but even in the 80s, if I'm going to write a letter to my parents, it's not going to be typed.
You're going to write it.
And write it.
It's, they could tell like it had Paula's signature on it. Like, so she had signed it. Like they were like, that is her signature.
Okay.
But that's even weirder.
That
it's like
weirder.
You typed a letter and then you got a pen out to sign it.
Right.
Like,
well,
that's strange.
Well, she was doing a secretary stuff and maybe...
I don't know. So in the letters, she says not to worry, that she just needs some time away to find herself. And the family is suspicious.
Yeah.
Like, immediately
like,
worried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm even more worried now, you know? So they don't think that just taking off is something that Paula would do. And it just didn't sound like something their daughter would write either. Like,
right.
You know, you have a sense of even the way that nowadays we text each other, like you have a sense of the way that people communicate,
right.
You know?
Right, yeah. Like Mackenzie with her all caps. I'm like, yes. Yep, that's actually Mackenzie.
Yes, exactly.
And Amy with her multi-bubbles.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God, it's so true.
But I would know. I would know if that wasn't Amy or if that wasn't Mackenzie texting in like a heartbeat.
Because I can also hear it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can hear that text.
People write in their voice.
Yeah.
That's true.
So they take these letters to the police and they file a missing persons report. Despite how adamant Paula's parents were that something was wrong, the police looked at the letter and the fact that Paula was over the age of 18.
Yep,
and
all shoulders.
Yep, they said that there was nothing they could do. There was
up
no
and left.
Real evidence of a crime. And they believed that it was probable that Paula just took off on her own. So they did file the report.
Every
but they
time
were like,
it just sounds like, you know what? I really don't want to do this.
You know what?
I have so many other things I'd rather be doing than my jobs.
I have this amazing sub I just got. So
it's getting cold. So if we could wrap this up real fast, that'd be...
You know, just leave these with us. We'll take a look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, like they filed the report and then they just like put it literally in a file and walked away. Like, so fast forward a few months to January of 1985. A frantic woman calls 911. She is concerned about her sister-in-law, 19-year-old Lisa Stacy, whom she hasn't seen or heard from in a couple of days. So Lisa was described as troubled, but mostly to me, it just sounds like she had a rough go of it and had fallen on some hard times.
Right.
So when she was 18, she met a man named Carl Stacy and became pregnant with their daughter, Tiffany, and the two married. But the marriage fell apart really quickly, like in a matter of months. And
I was
she
gonna
had,
say, this girl's already is just 19. As it is. Mm-hmm.
And she had like uprooted her life to move to Kansas. Like she didn't have any family there, like, or any friends. Yeah. And then, you know, she had a baby and then the marriage fell apart. So Carl took off to Illinois where he re-enlisted in the Navy, and Lisa and Tiffany were left homeless for a period of time.
Oh,
they eventually
Jesus.
Ended up in a group home for women.
Oh my God.
For a little while. Her luck looked like it was turning around, however, when a few days before she went missing, she was accepted into the Kansas City Outreach Program, which was a program started by a man named John Osborne to assist single mothers and help them get a new start in life. So Lisa was overjoyed by this opportunity. And so on January 9th, Lisa was picked up by John Osborne at her in-law's house. John Osborne puts Lisa and Tiffany up in a hotel near his offices in Overland Park. And later that evening, Lisa's mother-in-law receives a phone call from Lisa and she's hysterical. She's saying that they're telling her that her mother-in-law is trying to take her baby away. And
what?
They've made her sign these blank sheets of paper and she doesn't know what they're for. But why would she try and take her baby? And the mother-in-law is trying to calm her down and tell her that, like, I would never do that. I'm not involved in it. Whatever they're telling you, like, I'm not involved in this. So don't do anything. Don't sign anything. This is sketch, right?
Oh, my God. That's terrifying.
Terrifying. And at that point, Lisa says, they're coming now, and hangs up the phone. And
ooh.
That's the last time anyone hears from Lisa Stacy.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. This
I can't
is
believe
fucking...
I don't know this story.
Oh,
nothing.
It is.
I know nothing.
It gets so much worse.
No,
okay. So the next day on January 10th, the in-laws go to the hotel and they learn that Lisa has checked out and that the room had been paid for by a local business. So when they check to see who the business belonged to, they learn that it did not belong to John Osborne, but a man named John Robinson.
Hmm.
So they get the address for his business. It was called Equitu. And Lisa's brother-in-law goes to check it out. But when he arrives, a young man who works there wouldn't let him in the building and basically like pushes him out.
What?
Yeah. And then that evening, the Stacys receive a voicemail on their answering machine. And the person on the line says they're a local priest by the name of Father Martin. And Father Martin says that he runs a mission downtown. And he tells the Stacys, like, hey, don't worry about Lisa and Tiffany. I've seen them around the mission. They're fine. So just like chill out. But by the way,
put them on.
They're not here anymore.
No.
They've left town with this dude named Bill.
Nope.
Oh,
okay. They didn't.
No.
So the Stacys, not a family of dummies.
I love the Stacey's already.
They mm-hmm. call the mission. It's a real mission. They call the mission and they're like, hey, I need to talk to Father Martin. And they learn that there is no Father Martin mm-hmm. working there.
Yeah. Star 69.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's calling me?
Uh-huh.
Who's calling me?
So now is when they call 911 and file a missing persons report. And when they do, like a little light bulb goes off in the investigators' heads because it sounds eerily similar to Paula's case from 4 months before.
Well, kudos to them for actually like right? making that connection too, because yeah. there's a lot of stories we have where yeah. that doesn't happen.
Yes.
Oh, no.
But
is that where the kudos in?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they go and find John Robinson, the owner of the business that paid for Lisa's hotel room, and they discover that this is the same John who runs the Kansas City outreach program. And I couldn't find anything about them asking him, like, yo, why do you use a different name?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know about that. But he basically tells them, yeah, Lisa was recommended to me for my outreach program, so I did pick her up and take her to my office. And I wanted to help her out, but this guy named Bill showed up and she said that it was her boyfriend and that she didn't need help anymore. And away she went. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what he says.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So he basically says that she was going to move away with Bill and start a new life and that he should offer the outreach program opportunity to someone else who might need it more. Doesn't mm-hmm. really track. Like, she was very mm-hmm. excited about this. The family doesn't know a Bill, right? Yeah. So police are like, okay, cool. Thanks for your time. Like, they're just like, okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. And so they go to tell the family what he said. And the family is like, no. That doesn't sound like Lisa, right? No. It just doesn't make any sense. But still, the cops are like, well,
that's what he said. And he's a guy. So he would probably know.
And Lisa is troubled. And she's over 18. And there's just not much that we can do. She probably just wanted to start a new life. Just... all shoulders. Bye. A few days later, the family receive a typed letter in the mail signed by Lisa. And in it, she says that she really just needed to get away and just to leave her alone. And the women's shelter that she was staying at also receives a letter. So the family turns the letters into the police and they're like, cool, we'll put it in the file. And then the case goes cold.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh my God.
Then, in June of 1987, so 2 years later, a 27-year-old woman named Catherine Clampett, who had moved to Kansas City from Texas, she arrives in Kansas City, and she starts looking for a new job right away, and she comes across an ad in the paper for an executive secretary position for a CEO named John Dawson, and she ends up getting the job. Now, Catherine was very in touch with her family back in Texas. She would call and write letters often, usually several times a week. And so she told them all about her new job and everything that was going on in her life. She was really excited about it. So when the family doesn't hear from her for a while, like, you know, a week or so, they start to grow concerned. But they're probably just thinking, you know, that she's started this new job. She's busy. She's getting adjusted to a new city, whatever. But then her mother grows really concerned when she receives a typewritten letter from yeah. Catherine that is signed by her. Now, she'd received enough letters from her daughter at this point to know that does not sound like her.
Yeah, that's not her. Yeah.
So a few more weeks go by, and then the family, when they don't hear from her, they send her stepbrother out. He calls Catherine's office and asks to speak to John Dawson, but is told that no such employee exists. So they're like, okay, we got to get boots on the ground. So that's when they send the stepbrother out there to Kansas. So he gets into her apartment and goes through her things and finds that she had recently stayed in a hotel, and the hotel was paid for by a man named John Robinson of Equitoo, which was a consulting firm that Catherine was working for. So he goes to the offices only to find that they're closed because the CEO of the company, John Robinson, has been arrested on charges of fraud and theft. So police Ooh. Consider John to be like basically a white collar criminal, small time grifter. Mm-hmm. At this point, Catherine's stepbrother goes to the cops and reports her missing and gives them all of this information like that he's collected. Now, this is extremely frustrating, but I am trying to remember that, you know, this was the late 80s, right? Like,
yeah.
And things were done differently back then. But Despite the similarities between all of these cases and the fact that literally the same guy slash company, John Robinson,
is involved in
all the cases, they were not linked because they had been assigned to different detectives and because they deemed that there was no evidence that a crime had been committed in these cases.
Mm. Y'all need some like morning meetings.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, hey, what are you guys working
quick
on?
Quick check-in. Yeah.
Quick check-in. Well, I have this guy. Girl went missing. Oh, that's weird. I do too. See, that. Yeah.
Where's
like
your
that?
Water cooler talk? Because yeah. I do recognize it's the late 80s, so it's not like they're hopping on Slack or anything right. like that.
Right.
You know,
right.
they don't have like task timelines and stuff. But yeah, around the water cooler, you're not going to be like, hey, Bob, I have this really interesting case.
Yeah, this is weird, right? These typewritten letters are kind of strange, huh?
Yeah. Like,
because
what? You got typewritten letters too?
Exactly. There we go.
Because they didn't think a crime had been committed, they just really just filed it all away and didn't cross-reference the files at all. So the cops were basically like, I decay. It's weird, but we don't know where she went. Sorry. And her case goes cold as well.
Ugh, sloppy.
10 years go by. March of 2000. 27-year-old Suzette Troughton was living with her mother in Michigan when she decided that she wanted to start a new life, fresh start. So she finds a job in Kansas and relocates. The job that she finds is to work for, you guessed it, a wealthy businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And her job would be to take care of this businessman's father while he was away doing business.
Okay, so is it a 10-year gap because he was imprisoned? For a while?
He was in jail for some of that time, but I don't think he spent...
Like all 10 years?
Definitely not.
Yeah, that's a long time in between crime. Mm-hmm. I'm like wondering if there's other people that we don't know about.
Mm. Mm. Now.
Okay.
Here again, we have a woman who is very close to her mother, right? Uh-huh. So Suzette talks to her mom constantly, like almost every day.
I think we're learning a valuable lesson here.
Yeah, talk to your mom.
Yeah.
Give her a call.
She wants to hear from you.
Yeah.
She wants to know that you're okay. And also, then she'll be able to recognize that the typewritten letter is not
yes.
you.
Also, the thing that I couldn't stop getting out of my head because everything turns into a movie for me is when you sign shit for somebody else, write your name wrong. Spell your name wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I put an E on the end of Cassie, you're going to know for motherfucking sure.
100%.
Or there's something wrong.
Or, that's your special... Wrong. Sign.
Like if you wrote Christine and not Christina, I'd be like Keegan K E A.
Yeah,
I'm like who?
One E. You know something's wrong.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So she talks to her mom all the time, and she's really excited. Her mom is really excited that her daughter has found this great job, and she's starting this new chapter in her life. And for the first month, Suzette called and emailed her like every day. So it was surprising when all communication just stopped. Suzette's mom is on this shit fast. She wastes no time. She hasn't heard from her daughter in a couple of days, and she's like suspicious. So she finds the contact info for her daughter's employer and is like, hey, I haven't heard from my daughter. Do you know anything? And he's like, oh, yeah, Suzette skipped town with a dude named Jim Turner, and they're planning on sailing around the world in a sailboat. So
that doesn't happen. Nobody, it doesn't.
That's like, not true.
Okay.
That's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, so you might not hear from her for a while. Okay, bye.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Her mom
said
is like,
no one ever.
Nah, like no way my daughter would take off to sail the world without telling me. Like not my Suzette.
Mm-mm. No.
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 So she calls the cops and is like, my daughter is missing. She was working for this guy named John Robinson. Can you please check it out? So a little while later, her mom starts to receive letters, same as the others. One is from Mexico. One is from California,
mm-hmm.
Stating that she's fine. She's sailing around the world with the new love of her life, Jim.
No.
So Suzette took one look at these letters and was like, absolutely the fuck not.
She does not spell her name that way.
Well, here's the thing. So because she communicated often with her mom, like often via email, so mm-hmm. like actual typed. So they had that kind of comparison. She knew that the letters couldn't be from Suzette because Suzette was not good at spelling. And these letters had no spelling errors.
Oh.
And she's like, that's not. Mm-mm. So she's like, she admitted that the signature at the bottom was her daughter's. And it was very clear that it had been written. Like it wasn't copied mm-hmm. or like it wasn't a stamp. It was like there was a pen mark, like impression. Mm. So she knew at least that her daughter had signed these pieces of paper. Mm-hmm. So she goes to Kansas and marches into the police station and is like, you got to do something about this. And at this point, there are still officers there from the 80s. And also technology has advanced at this point. So they're like, I love that it's taken them this long that they're like, huh, this John Robinson guy seems a little sketch, you know. So they're like, let's take a look, right? And so they, at this point, finally connect all of the cases. Okay. At this point, and I don't know how, the FBI gets involved. And I should say that I got a lot of my information from an episode of a show called FBI Criminal Pursuit, which is nice. On YouTube.
Okay. YouTube.
Okay. So they start looking into John Robinson, and they see that he has been arrested several times for white-collar offenses like embezzlement, fraud, and theft from companies that he'd worked for. But despite this, they were like, he seems like an upstanding individual.
That sounds about right.
He's right. He's well respected.
Oh, of
course. He's married mm-hmm. with four kids. He's mm-hmm. involved in a lot of local charities. He'd run a few businesses and now owned a magazine about farming life. Just a good old boy. Very active in his church, right? Of course.
Oh, yeah.
So the police acknowledged that he was definitely a grifter, but he hadn't had an arrest since 1986. And so they were like, I don't know, you just seem like a standard middle class Midwest Christian man.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is BTK.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Also in Kansas.
Exactly. Yes. Mr. Wichita. Raider. Yes.
So they don't really have anything that they can arrest John for, and they don't want to tip him off by taking him into custody. So they decide to look deeper into Suzette's past to try and find some more clues and end up looking into her online history. Now, okay. It's a lot of information, and you might be thinking, Keegan, this is a tainted love story.
Right.
Where's the relationship?
I was thinking it. I was like, this is very interesting, but what's the angle?
Well, we're getting to it.
Okay.
All right. So as investigators are looking through her online activity, they find that Suzette was really into BDSM. Now, before I go any further, you know, we've talked about BDSM on this podcast before. Mm-hmm. I want to make it really clear. We do not yuck anybody's yum over here.
No. Nope.
BDSM might not be for everybody, but there's nothing wrong with it as long as it's done safely between consenting partners.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So Suzette was very active in BDSM communities and chat rooms online. And as a sexual submissive, she was looking for a master that she could engage with. So she was, it was very specifically into master and slave play. I don't like that language personally, mm-hmm. but that is that is the language that's used. So that's what I'm going to use throughout this story. Okay.
Yeah. And there's a lot of abuse too. That's pretty rife in that I'm glad that there's more people talking about BDSM and the proper way to mm-hmm. have that sort of arrangement, and that the power should actually lie with the submissive and not with the dominant, but yeah.
Right. Anyways. Yeah. Yeah. So as investigators dug in, they realized that Suzette had met a new master online when she was living in Michigan, and the full truth was that she had moved to Kansas to engage in a consensual slave-master relationship, and also to be, you know, she was like, he was also like, you can also work for me, I'll pay you to take care of my dad, right? So the master was none other than John fucking Robinson. So investigators are like, okay, that's interesting, but this in itself isn't illegal. So why don't we just keep an eye on John Robinson and see what he does? So they follow him and they quickly realize that he is living a double life. At home, he has this like leave it to beaver life. He kisses his wife goodbye in the morning. But when she thinks he's away at work, he really is kind of trolling the town, hitting up a bunch of different strip clubs, hanging out in seedy motels where they see different women going in and out all day. And then like 5 o'clock would roll around, and they described it in that documentary that it was like punching a time clock. Like 5 o'clock would roll around and he'd go back home. So,
whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. Still, wow. They don't really have anything that they can arrest John on. It's not illegal to be scummy, you know?
That's one of my, like, biggest fears is, like...
A double life.
Well, yeah. It's just, like, not knowing at all who your partner is.
Yeah.
Like, and
yeah.
Oh.
Isn't that terrifying?
That is so
Because he'd been
scary,
with this woman for, like, 40 years. Like, his wife.
Oh, I have chills.
Yeah.
Oh.
So,
all right, everybody follow your partner to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll take
binoculars.
Yeah. We'll get like a Raquel Welch wig.
Yeah.
Like,
is that Christina? Not fooling anyone.
I know, I'm so
you
tall.
Duck behind a bush. So, the FBI decides to start monitoring his phone calls and his online activity, and they find that John is also a frequent visitor to BDSM websites and was in constant search for slaves, submissives. On the site that John was most active on, he had the username Master. Just Master, which
Boy,
is honestly...
he must have joined early.
He was yes. like...
He's not even like Master 6969.
Yeah, no.
Right, right. Master 420.
Master 012 or something. Yeah. You're like, oh man, 11 people beat me to it.
Got in on the ground floor.
Heck yeah.
So something I liked about that episode of FBI Criminal Pursuit was that they did have a BDSM expert on there who was part of the community mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about it so that it didn't get too shamey. Because especially these yeah. like, you know, this thing was from like, I think 2011 and or earlier maybe. And sure. it's like a crime show. And sometimes yeah. like, they, yeah. those can get really
they
shamey.
They love to shame.
Yes, yes. they sure do. She explained on the episode that anyone who is a master would very, very rarely refer to themselves that way. So it would actually be a huge red flag for that to be someone's username in one of these communities. Mm-hmm. But Suzette didn't realize that at the time. Mm. So John would offer women money, clothes, jobs, etc. in return for being their master. The BDSM expert also specifies that the trust within master-slave relationships is absolute and inviolate, and it's supposed to be a two-way street. The master is supposed to be responsible for the safety
yeah.
of, you know, the people who are brought in. So Suzette likely just believed him, like when sure. he promised her all of this stuff, you know. Police end up getting a room next to the room that John frequents at this shady motel.
Mm.
Imagine working for a motel and having regulars. Like,
no.
You know?
I don't like
and
that.
And it's... And they just like sit in the room next to his room. Just ugh. I'm just picturing them like glass,
with
the
glass
to the wall.
To the wall.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was imagining.
And oh. they are hearing slaps. They oh. are hearing clearly hearing sex stuff happening. Like there's right. sex sure. acts happening. But at this point
and they're giggling. They're like
But at this point they know he's part of this community, so like clearly there's slapping and stuff happening, but they're like, it's probably consensual.
Yeah.
yeah. But then they get a big break. A woman comes into the police station and says that she met a man named James Turner online when she was looking for a job. And he was like, cool, let's set up a job interview at this hotel. Weird.
No. And also, Mr. Turner, aren't you halfway around the world?
Yeah.
Now?
Jim. Yeah. Jim.
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 So she goes, and while there, the two get into a disagreement, and out of nowhere, this guy slaps her hard in the face.
No.
And so she goes to the front desk, and she's like, I'm filing a report on this guy. I need his info. And they tell her that his name is John Robinson. So she files a complaint for sexual battery. So she files a complaint for sexual battery, and then another woman comes in and also files a complaint for sexual battery and robbery against John, and the cops are like, okay, this is getting out of hand. We have enough to bring him in. Like, let's go get him.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to his house. They tell him that they're there to arrest him. And he's like super chill about it. He invites them in. He's really friendly or whatever. And they tell him that they're arresting him for sexual battery and robbery. And he's still pretty chill. But when they get him in the handcuffs, they're like, oh, and by the way, we know about four missing women that all seem to be tied to you. So we're going to need to talk about that, too. And at that moment, he, like, all the blood drains from his face and he has a panic attack. Mm. While they're holding him on these charges, they secure some warrants and confiscate his computers and all his files dating back many, many years.
Oh, can you imagine being mm-hmm. that job, digging through somebody's computer? Mm.
This kind of person's computer, too. So while searching his stuff, they find that he has two storage units, one in Kansas and one in Missouri. So they go to the Kansas one and they find a shit ton of birth certificates, driver's licenses, social security cards, etc., all of them belonging to women, including some of the women who were missing.
Ooh.
So they find out that John's family owned a farm in Linn County. So they go down there and they search it. On the property, they find two large 88-gallon barrels.
No.
When trying to move one of the barrels, they tip it over.
No.
And a liquid that looks like blood starts seeping out. No. So they're like, oh, no. And when they open it, they find Suzette's body. When they open the second barrel, they find another woman inside, but they didn't know who this person was. This was not any of the missing women that they knew about. No. So they go to the other storage unit in Missouri to search that, and in it, they find three more barrels Mm-mm. with three more bodies inside. Again, other than Suzette, none of these bodies match the women who had been reported missing.
Oh, these like so sex like, workers.
God.
These, oh, fucking no.
Right.
So a few weeks later, they're able to identify the body of the woman in the barrel on the farm. And this was 21-year-old Isabella. Isabella was a Polish immigrant who had moved to Kansas in 1999 to marry John.
Mm.
Oh.
I know what you're thinking. Wasn't John already married?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. So the two didn't end up actually getting married, but they did find a slave contract in John's documents between him and Isabella that gave him basically total control over her life.
Oh.
When Isabella went missing, her family didn't report it because they had been receiving signed letters and emails from her that said that she was traveling around Europe. So they were like, I don't know, you know, she's wanderlust, you know?
Mm.
Both Isabella and Suzette had died from blunt force trauma to the head. As far as the other three women found in the barrels in the storage unit in Missouri, they were able to ID them as 49-year-old Beverly Bonner, 45-year-old Sheila Faith, and the other was her 15-year-old disabled daughter, Debbie Faith.
Oh, that's awful.
None of them had missing person reports. So Beverly had met John when she was working as a prison librarian while he was incarcerated in the 90s. Despite the fact that both of them were married, they began an affair. And when John left prison, Beverly followed him to continue their relationship. So she divorced her husband, who was a doctor, and she started receiving $1,000 a month in alimony checks, which doesn't sound like a lot.
No.
John finds out about this, though, and I guess that $1,000 a month seemed enticing to him or something because he kills Beverly and starts cashing her checks every month. Her
wow.
family, her family did think that something was up, but again, they were getting letters and Beverly was already kind of behaving a little recklessly. So they were like, I don't know, maybe she's just like on one right now. And, you
right.
know, she'd left her husband for an inmate, right? So all of them, I think, just assumed that she was going through like a wild phase. And besides, her checks were being cashed every month. So they were like, she's probably fine. She probably just doesn't want us to talk to her right now. As for Sheila.
Ain't that the lesson of this story?
Right.
Call your fucking mom.
Yes.
Yeah. As for Sheila and Debbie, John had met Sheila on a BDSM website when she was in search of a master. But she tells John that her 15-year-old daughter, Debbie, is disabled. So she's not really in a position to just pick up and move to be with him. But he convinces her that he wants to engage in a relationship with her and that if she and her daughter move to Kansas to be with him, he's a wealthy businessman and he will take care of them and they'll be able to afford the best care for Debbie.
Oh, that's
terrible.
So fucked up.
So they do. They move to Kansas. John kills Sheila and Debbie almost immediately and begins cashing the disability checks that Sheila had been receiving for her daughter, and he
Damn.
Continues to cash those checks for 6 years.
Okay. Holy shit.
I'm going to need y'all to hold on to your tits for this next part, okay?
Okay, tits held.
So during the investigation, police get a tip that John had helped his brother adopt a baby in 1985.
His now brother, I know this story. Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm, yes.
His brother gave him $5,000 and John gave him a bunch of paperwork signed by a judge that this was all a legit adoption and a fresh baby, okay? Turned out that the baby was Lisa Stacy's baby, Tiffany, and she had been living with John Robinson's brother for 15 years.
You're fucking kidding.
She's a teenager, and she's just been, like, these are her parents, right? Like,
what?
John's, that's bonkers. That's not how adoption works, like, no, at all.
No, no, I mean, yeah, and that's the thing is, like, John's brother might have been stupid, like, because... Yeah. How could you have thought that that's how this worked? But most people do seem to believe that he had no idea it wasn't a legit adoption. Like, he was just like, you know, wait, I have all of this paperwork. Like, that's my baby. And it turned out, of course, that John had forged all those documents. So poor Tiffany. I can't imagine how traumatizing this must have been for her, because she's a teenager. They went ahead and gave her the choice whether she wanted to stay with the Robinson family or go back to her biological family, and she actually chooses to stay with the Robinsons because,
I mean, that
it's all she's ever known. Like, that's her family. Her
parents, and it's not like her dad is the one who did anything wrong, hopefully not.
But. And there's a picture of John Robinson holding, like, baby Tiffany. It is so fucked up.
Dude.
Yeah. Later in life, she would actually sue the hospital that recommended John's outreach program to her mom because... Yeah, what the fuck? Like, he was in, that outreach program was in, like, they had a deal with, like, a local hospital, and that hospital recommended people.
Oh, no.
Like, terrible.
Did you hear about, speaking of hospitals and babies, did you hear about that case here in California, wasn't it? Where, mm-hmm, like, IVF, they accidentally swapped
embryos.
So, these people had to carry... other people, and so, and then that had them for a few months, and that was their baby, and then they figure out, like, no, actually that's those people's embryos and sperm, and that is your
god.
Can you imagine?
I saw that.
Horrible. Oh, horrible. Oh,
the psychological trauma.
The trauma.
And, like, what do you do? Because it's, that's like, your baby. That's the baby that you carried, but then it's like, but that's the, your genetic baby over there. Isn't that a, that's, I don't know, rough.
It's,
they're suing, and I'm like, secure all of the bag, because that is a very traumatic.
It's an impossible, like.
Yeah, it's impossible.
It's an impossible, like, decision.
Yeah.
You know, that's terrible. In October of 2002. Oh, that's okay.
To go back to this impossible decision. I think, I'm thinking, like, long term. I think it's easier to explain when they're a teenager that something happened when they were a couple months old, and oh my gosh, there was a weird swappity swap, but we finally got you back. I think that's easier to explain to a teenager than, oh, by the way, you're adopted, or you're our child, but you're not our child, and that's what happened. I don't know. Like, to me, I think you,
right?
I think you
have to be in each other's lives.
Yeah,
I think I would need that. Like,
I think from what I remember, I think they switched back, but this is the baby that they delivered and have had for a few months.
Yeah, that's not easy.
Be horrible.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying, when I'm thinking about, like, what's less traumatic for the child in the long term.
Yeah.
I think that might be less traumatic.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Tiffany.
Back to your horrible.
Yeah,
though.
Sorry. In October of 2002, John went on trial in Kansas for the murders of Isabella, Lisa, and Suzette. He pleaded not guilty, but was convicted of all three murders. He received life in prison for the murder of Lisa and two death penalties for the murders of Isabella and Suzette. Now, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because they didn't find Lisa's body, but they must have had enough other evidence that he killed her to put him on trial. Then he goes to Missouri to stand trial for the murders of Beverly, Debbie, and Sheila. To avoid receiving the death sentence, which, like, at this point,
why
does it matter? He pleaded guilty to the murders of all three women. Investigators were never able to discover what happened to Paula, Catherine, or Lisa, as their bodies were never found. Law enforcement also believe that there is a strong possibility there are more victims.
Oh, absolutely there are.
But John Robinson is not talking, and he's still alive. He is currently sitting on death row in Kansas. And I thought that even though it's not as relationship focused as a lot of our other Tainted Loves, he is considered the internet's first serial killer. Like, he's considered the first person to, like,
use the internet
to lure victims and use this, like, promise of a, like, romantic or sexual relationship to get women.
Yeah.
You know? So at the time, people just really didn't know how to navigate the internet.
Right.
Like,
right.
They just,
oh, please, we honey, still don't. Please, thank you. I was just going to say, research suggests, no, honey, it doesn't.
I mean, we've talked about this, like, many times. It's just like, people still get tricked and conned and lured and all kinds of things. Like, well,
also, the internet is deteriorating right now. It's like, something like more than half of the links are dead. And it's, Yeah, it's an easy place, and this is something that I've tried to explain to my own mom. It's like, it is a very, I always go in to anything I see on the internet is fake.
Yep.
That's my first thought, is that this is fake information until it's not. But
I think also if you're...
I would never uproot my life and move to Kansas.
No, me neither. But I think also, I think people who are in these communities that are like also really stigmatized, the internet was kind of the first time where it was like, oh, I can connect with other people who like have similar
minded.
Yeah. You know, I feel similarly about this as I do. And I think that you can sometimes like let your guard down about.
Yeah. You know, 'cause you're connecting on something that is not, you know, like an everyday thing. But I mean, I still feel like the moral of the story is like,
call your mom
often, and don't uproot your life for something that you find on the internet, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at least not in this way, like not in this way. Like, I know that there are lots of people who have met online and had successful relationships.
The thing that fucks me up, though, the most about the story is Lisa's story, is that she thought she was getting a fucking way out with that outreach shit he was doing. That's so fucked up.
And those ones, like, it makes so much less sense to me because I'm like, these women thought that they were coming to work for you. Like, it wasn't even a, like, relationship thing.
Right.
Like, it's... Why did you kill them? Like, did you kill them? Because it's not like you were cashing their disability checks or their alimony checks.
They were signed on to be apparently
a slave. This is a sick individual.
Yeah.
This is a sick individual hiding in BDSM.
Yes.
Yeah.
When he's like not even close to what the tenets of BDSM are.
Yeah.
At all.
Right.
Yeah. It's so very scary. It's just, I don't know, very, very scary.
Ugh, good one. Yeah, I didn't know about it until the barrels.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
and the baby bit is just like a wild.
Yeah, poor Tiffany.
Wow,
factoid. I just can't imagine what that would be like.
On that note, what are we watching this week? Mm. Well, I will start. I finished Deadwood.
Ugh.
All the way up and through the movie.
I haven't seen the movie.
It's such a shame that it got canceled. The writing is superb. Shakespearean.
Yes.
You know, it has a very like iambic feel to it, despite the fact that the word cocksucker is used about 3,000 times an episode.
Don't make it a drinking game.
And Ian McShane has some of the most incredible monologues.
Yes. Can we talk about how like, I full-on told Eric, we had a whole conversation where I was like, I have to tell you, he is magnetically sexy in this show.
And it shouldn't be. No, it shouldn't egregious. Be. It is horrifying.
It's like, horrifying, but I'm like...
You should not be attracted to that man.
Not at all, but am I?
Oh,
you're like,
it's... and he's not at all conventionally handsome or something, but it's his vibe, his old intensity. West vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
We might actually go to Deadwood for Eric's birthday. Ooh, next year.
Fun.
Just because it's fucking there. Why not?
Yeah, that's cool.
It is, you know.
Dude, I want to do that. That'd be so rad.
Yeah. I love Westerns. I really do. I mean, I love like all like historical things, sure. like the old West and like imagining what it would be like to live in like 1870s Dakota. I mean,
No, thank you. No. It looks dusty. Everybody looks like they smell.
It smells.
I'm like, I can't believe the number of layers that you are wearing right now. It is hot. What are you doing?
So yeah, no, I definitely recommend it. We're kind of going on a spree of like shows that are critically acclaimed that we never finished or never watched kind of thing. So Deadwood was on it. Definitely recommend.
Yeah.
The movie gives it a nice little wrap up.
Oh, nice.
Because you know how the third season just ends and it's not a real ending. So recommend the movie.
I hate when that happens.
Me too. Okay. So I watched the show on Netflix. I was just looking for something kind of like spooky vibes. You know, I finished The Chestnut Man, but I wanted something that was, I love foreign language shows, but I wanted something that was in English so that I could have it on while I'm doing other things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I watched a show called Chambers, and it has Uma Thurman in it.
Oh.
And Aidan Quinn. And I don't know how I feel about it. I don't think I liked it.
Great.
Like I watched it. I watched like, the whole thing. It's about like a girl who
like don't recommend
gets a heart transplant and like is having all of these like cellular memories like of the other person.
Oh, okay.
And then like her family is like richy rich and weird, and they kind of like take her in. It's weird. It's a weird show.
Okay.
All right. There's a culty aspect to it.
Yeah.
It's strange.
All right.
Okay. Well, Chris and I did kind of what you and Eric were doing, which is like, let's kind of check out some of these acclaimed film or shows.
Right.
And so I was like, Succession has been on our list for since
it's
came
on,
out.
It's on mine too.
Oh, I've been watching Succession.
Like most of the first season and got so fucking frustrated. It's so good, but man, do I hate rich people bitching about their problems.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't get any easier. It doesn't.
We watched 2 episodes and I cannot. It's not for me. It's just not not what I'm looking for. So I found some art history Baroque program on Amazon, and that's what I've been going to sleep to.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, Succession. I am watching it. I'm watching the 3rd season right now. It is so good. Like, it is a technically
great the acting show. Fantastic. Flawless.
Like
the writing,
Kieran Culkin,
great,
insanely good in that.
Also, but somebody that shouldn't be hot.
But also, someone who shouldn't be hot. We should fuck, marry, kill people who shouldn't be hot but are for some reason.
Absolutely, I'm gonna write that in our book right now.
Because speaking of that, I was watching Succession and Adrian Brody is in.
He is so fucking hot,
and I'm like,
also shouldn't be.
Your face doesn't make sense to me, but it's like so hot.
I am so attracted to Adrian Brody. Same. He's been on my list since day one.
Yeah.
So I waited on him when I first moved here to LA, and he is very intense in person.
Oh God!
Like eye contact, very present, and I was like,
Jesus,
very uncomfortable.
I am piercing
piercing eyes.
Yeah,
and I was just like,
I'm scared, so but also turned on.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Who is the actor that plays Kurt Vonnegut in X-Men?
Kurt Vonnegut, sci-fi author.
No, like what's the guy who goes through the walls and stuff?
Oh, Magneto. Nope. Oh, that's the guy that goes through the walls.
No, yeah, Magneto.
Oh, no, I know who you're talking about. Nightcrawler.
Zaps. Nightcrawler, thank you.
His real name Cummings?
Yes. Thank you. Sorry, that was a journey.
That's okay.
I'm here for you.
Yeah, I like it. I like where we was like, I felt like charades.
Alan Cummings.
Wow.
As the fucking dude face in Cabaret.
Yes. Why is he so fucking hot?
He's really hot.
Oh, no. He's definitely a unique hot.
Anyways, yeah, I put it on the list. So episode 180, our FMK will be people that shouldn't be hot. So if you have suggestions, definitely write them
Let
in.
Let us know.
If you have shows that we should watch, if you have stories, please. I know it's holiday time. Yes. Give me those holiday stories. Go to our one-stop shop of website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.